Yashodanandana Braj Janaranjana. Yashodanandana Braj Janaranjana. Yashodanandana Braj Janaranjana. Jamunatiravana Chari. Jamunatiravana Chari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Kacharya. Astotra Satat Sissibhadi Divine Grace is confined to Acharya. Sila Issi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribraja Kacharya. Astotra Satat Sissibhadi Divine Grace. Sila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Goswami Prabhupada Maharaj Ki Jai. Ananta Koji Vaishnavinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Sila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Si Kahao Si Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Si Advaita Gadadhar Si Vasadi Si Gaura Bhaktavinda Ki Jai. Sisi Radha Krishna Gopala Gopinath Sianakunda Radha Kunda Girigavadana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Simaya Panavadvip Dhamma Ki Jai. Jaganapuri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Yamanamaya Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhaktavinda Ki Jai. Nithai Gaur Premanandi. Our glory is to the Sama Devotees. Our glory is to the Sama Devotees. Our glories to the sum of the bodies. Our glories, Sisi Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyatsa Tato Jaya Mudirayet Nastva Payesa Bhadresu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttamasloke Bhakti Bhava Iti Naistiki Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20, Text 53. Title of this chapter is Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura. Tebhya chike kasa swasya. Dehasyam sam adad aja. Yatat samadhi yogadi. Tapo vidya virakti mat. Tebhya cheke kasa swasya. Dehasyam sam adad aja. Yatat samadhi yogadi. Tapo vidya virakti mat. Tebhya cheke kasa swasya. Dehasyam sam adaraja. Yatat samadhi yogadi. Tapo vidya virakti mat. Can someone try? Ladies. Any more ladies to match up with the men? The three people here. So word for word translation and purport by His Divine Grace is confirmed Acharya Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you. Tebhyaha. To them. Cha. An. Ekekatsaha. Each one, swasya, of his own, dehasya, body, ansam, part, adat, gave, ajaha, the unborn Brahma, yat, which, that, Samadhi, deep meditation. Yoga, concentration of the mind. Riddhi, supernatural power. Tapaha, austerity. Vidya, knowledge. Virakti, renunciation. Mat, possessing. Translation, to each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, a supernatural power, austerity, adoration and renunciation. Please kindly responsibly repeat. To each one of these sons, the unborn creator of the universe gave a part of his own body, which was characterized by deep meditation, mental concentration, supernatural power, austerity, adoration and renunciation. Purport. The word Viraktimat in this verse means possessed of the qualification of renunciation. Spiritual realization cannot be attained by materialistic persons. For those who are addicted to sense enjoyment, spiritual realization is not possible. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that those who are too attached to seeking material possessions and material enjoyment cannot reach yoga samadhi, absorption in Krishna consciousness. Propaganda that one can enjoy this life materially and at the same time spiritually advanced is simply bogus. The principles of renunciation are 4. 1. To avoid illicit sex. 2. To avoid meat eating. 3. To avoid intoxication. 4. To avoid gambling. These 4 principles are called tapasya, or austerity, to absorb the mind in its supreme, in Krishna consciousness, to absorb the mind in the supreme in Krishna consciousness is a process of spiritual realization. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purpose of the third canto, 20th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the title Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura. Omagyana timirandasya yana jana salakaya saksur meditam yena tismai si gurave maha sucetaya manobhistam stavfetam yena bhutale swayam rupam kadamaya dadati sva padantika Vanchakalpatari Vyacha Kripasanambhya Yavacha Patitana Pavanambhya Vavacha. Vande Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodato Gududaya Puspavanto Chita Chandra Tamam. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pisaya Bhutale Simata Bhakti Vedanta Swami Etinam. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvisesa Sanyavadi Pachatya Disatari. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadarara Sivasadi Tsagor Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So again, welcome everyone to this segment of the morning program, which is the Bhagavatam class. People, thousands of years ago, they would sit down to listen to the Bhagavatam for a long time. Parikshit, listen to the Bhagavatam for 7 days. And we have to do it for less than an hour, which is good for us. Because in this Kali Yuga, our attention span is very, very low. And sometimes we think that we are advancing in such an astronomical way that now, you know, instead of sitting down to watch a video for 2 hours and all, they just bring the essential point for under 1 minute. It's called real. And so we think this is a very, you know, astronomical advancement. But this is a coping mechanism for our deficiency in low concentration, low attention span. This is a big problem. Now you find people who go to college, who finish university programs, or finish degree, and in some cases they can't write a coherent paragraph describing their job preference. Not everybody, but I've seen people like that, and you wonder, what? But it doesn't mean that people should not go to school. Okay, I'm not an advocate of no schooling. In fact, I have a condition for my disciples. They must pass the Bhakti Sastri before first initiation. Why? Because as I travel all over the world, I've seen majority of people are not reading Prabhupada's books. You ask anybody, they say, no, we're so busy, we don't have the time. But then we have the time to use our smartphones, to use the internet for up to 15 hours. So here Lord Brahma is very charitably disposed. He had his children and he gave part of his wealth to the children. It's not that he gave what he was tired of using. Let's be clear, okay? Lord Brahma did not give what he was tired of using. He know his children have to navigate through the challenges of life, so he gave them some facilities. And so this is important for us that Rupa Goswami also mentioned in the Upadisamrita, one of the principles of loving relationship is giving something, being charitably disposed, and of course also being ready to receive something or receiving something. And sometimes, you know, people give us some stuff and we are apt to tell them, I have this. I have this. That is like someone offers you some love and you're rejecting the love, because giving is loving. Of course, sometimes some of the givings are highly motivated. But we see in this text how Lord Brahma did not simply give or generated children, and then he left them by themselves to just struggle and navigate through the challenges of life. He made some provisions to facilitate that. Now, the other point mentioned in the purport is about the traditional principles that we follow in Krishna consciousness. It's interesting what Prabhupada mentions here. The principles of renunciation, the principles that we are following, the four regulatory principles of freedom, are principles of renunciation. They're not just rules and regulations. And that is why we can't have too many people. Let's be clear. Yeah, we can distribute knowledge, we can distribute Prabhupada's books, but we should not expect that everybody is going to be renounced. Because by dint of what Prabhupada mentions in the purport here, that these four principles are principles of renunciation, we cannot expect everyone on this planet who has read our books to be renunciants. But we have to do what is the needful. I have seen people who were like vice chancellors of universities. They love our movement so much. They arrange programs, use their position to arrange programs on campus. But they can't follow the four regulatory principles. But they're good friends of devotees. So there are different categories of people that the preachers will encounter, and we have to be very expert in how to inspire and motivate them to do the needful based on their capacity. I mean, it's just like we can't force every of our children to go get a PhD. We can't force everybody to go and take sannyas. I mean, I have some of my disciples, and they are young men, they've graduated, or they are in school. So I say, you think you can just move ahead and go to take sannyas? He said, no, Maharaj. But you know what? My Guru Maharaj, he didn't ask me, he didn't discuss anything with me. He just comes, during the festival, and then he says, well, I want Vasudev to take sannyas. That's it. These days, you know, we have different strategies. And therefore, we should appreciate what Prabhupada has given to us. And the important factor is that even these principles of renunciation, this is the gross aspect of it. For instance, I mentioned here, to avoid illicit sex. What does illicit sex mean to us? It means different things to different people. But the reality is that illicit sex means we have, in the material realm, we have two types of sex. What do you call it? Yeah. So we have sex that is geared towards procreation and sex that is not geared towards procreation. In fact, even in other traditions, for instance, I was just reading some things from in the Catholic, and if they read, some of them read our books and understand the deep, our dear philosophy, they will just think that, what? These guys are crazy. Yeah, so recreational sex and procreational sex. When sex is recreational, it tends to be circumscribed to illicit because it's not geared towards regeneration of the human species. And that alone is, I remember when, you know, when Prabhupada was to give the first initiation at 26 Second Avenue, they were asking questions, the prospective disciples were asking questions. And I remember vividly, this is documented in the Planting the Seed, the first volume. I remember, I think Brahmananda asked about, so Prabhupada was talking about how many rounds the initiated devotees have to chant, and then, you know, they were not aligning with Prabhupada because they felt it was too much. 64 rounds was too much. And then Prabhupada went down to 32 and then to 16. And he said, that's the rock bottom. And so I remember someone asked, what about people who are married? How many rounds shall we chant before having sex? And you know what Prabhupada said? Who remember what he said? Planting the Seed, Volume 1. He said 50 rounds. And then I think Brahmananda said, better don't give it up. Yeah, so in other traditions, sex is not just a big deal. When you are married, you can have it as fun. That's a particular term they use in the Vatican. I don't remember. I already read some things about that. And for us, this is something that we need to understand. That yeah, this is renunciation. So I'm mentioning this because of the language proper, the terminology proper used here in describing these four regulatory principles. He said, these are principles of renunciation. And talking about meat eating, that is a gross aspect of it. We talk about it, if we reflect deeply on that very principle, it's all about an advocacy for nonviolence. Nonviolence. And according to the American Psychological Science Association, nonviolence, by definition, is when we hurt someone or a group. So yes, no meat eating is a gross aspect of it. So if we hurt somebody, say we go to the internet and then start insulting somebody, that's violence. Oh yeah. Because someone feels hurt. And so these principles of renunciation are not just rules to check us from sense gratification, but they are principles for elevation in our consciousness. It's not just deprivation of sense gratification. Prabhupada mentions categorically here in this purport that these four regulatory principles are principles of renunciation. So anyone who is following these four regulatory principles is renounced. Let's be clear. And so, it is important for us to also understand that people need concentration to be able to walk through and elevate themselves. We need the concentration, a high concentration, to be able to upgrade ourselves in our careers. A manager needs high attention span to be able to concentrate and evaluating, make assessments of his workers and all this stuff. And even to generate ideas. Unfortunately for us, one of the positive side effects of the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, it just recently been proven through scientific research reports, is that the chanting helps to promote high attention span. Oh yeah. And so kids, the students who profess that, oh, they're too busy, they don't have time to chant, they're missing the whole point. This is what helps to promote your attention span. And I had some research that I conducted some years ago amongst our undergraduate students. So we're trying to evaluate their grades prior to their chanting and during their chanting period. And there was a big difference, a big gap. When they were chanting, their grades were far higher than prior to when they were not chanting. So that correlates with the recent experiment that was conducted. These experiments are conducted by non-devotees, so you can say, oh, they are Krishna devotees, they are biased. No. These are objective thinkers, objective researchers. And so it is important for us to appreciate what Prabhupada has given to us, that these teachings, they are not just some religious doctrines. Sometimes you hear Prabhupada say the Krishna consciousness movement, Krishna consciousness is a science. And it's true. A science is something that you can prove the validity of your assertion by experimental values. And researchers are already doing that with the Hare Krishna mantra. They have established that this chanting promotes high attention span. They have also established that the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra helps to promote high mental health. For instance, people are subject to stress, especially in the 21st century. Stress, anxiety, all of these mental health challenges have some implications for overall health. But then the beauty is that the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra has been proven beyond reasonable doubt through experimental research that the chanting helps to mitigate stress and anxiety. So, these teachings, they are not just some religious dogma. They are scientific teachings. And so here, we find that Lord Brahma, he was very much concerned about the welfare of his children. So he made some arrangements for them. He supported them. So we also should be in a supportive mood to our devotees, to other devotees around us, to our children, to our families. We shouldn't say, well, I'm so busy with Krishna, you know? So I don't have the time. You're so busy with Krishna, you don't have the time. Why you marry? You can just marry Krishna, you know? You don't have the time for your family. You're not ready to give the support to your family. Why you marry? Why pretend to be otherwise? So, there are a number of things we can learn from this very text and relate that to our everyday realities. One of the preeminent factors here is a support system. Brahma created a support system for his children. So we should create support system amongst our peers, amongst our team members, and in our communities in general. Because you know, whatever a great man does, the common man should follow, according to Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 3:21. Lord Brahma has set a good example for us. It's called a support system. Sri Krishna had in his text. And if we create a support system for our devotees, they will not feel disappointed when they hit the wall. They will be remembering the devotees in the community when they are successful. This is the whole idea of support system, that we don't feel, we don't act in a detached way to people around us. We create a support system, just like Lord Brahma did here in this text. Deep meditation. Prabhupada also mentioned in the purport that, you know, sometimes you hear people say, well, I do anything and everything, and I'm still, you know, I'm still very spiritual. The Prabhupada condensed that whole phenomenon because it never works. Krishna consciousness cannot be tallied with some material values. We may be very expert in multitasking, but we have to do one thing for Krishna and concentrate on that to be able to get maximum results. And therefore, for instance, our fundamental meditation process is the chanting. And for us to have proper concentration in the chanting, we should give some time, especially during the Brahma Muhurta hours, for the chanting. Why? Because when the sun, when activities begin, the energies, they're so charged with passion. And therefore, concentration becomes hindered. In fact, according to modern science, the best hours for innovative thinking, is the early morning hours, which is exactly what our acharyas have said, the Brahma Muhurta hours. We only want to accept what the scientists say, but the scientists are simply repeating. The scientists are simply repeating what our acharyas, what Lord Krishna has said several thousand years ago. And we think it's something new. So, it is important that austerity is required, but that what is the type of austerity we should perform? Divine austerity. Austerity in a mode of goodness. We perform austerities to increase our Krishna consciousness values. We don't perform austerities just to be able to acquire some mystical power or to acquire some physical strength for whatever reasons. These things could be a distraction in the process of trying to attain pure love for Krishna. In fact, even mystical power in the discussions with Uddhava, Lord Krishna mentions when he described the mystic cities to Uddhava in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna told Uddhava that, yeah, look, these things, they're not necessary for a devotee because they are a source of significant distraction to the part of pure devotional service. So we perform austerities, and just to chant 16 rounds every day is an austerity. For most people, it's a big challenge. But we have to do it because this is a recommendation. This is part of the process. So austerity is there. To not eat everything and anything, to not get involved in hogwash, is an austerity. Because the mouth, the vocal cavity is meant for wagging. So to restrain it is an austerity. So we are already performing austerity, there is no need to run into the forest and renounce everything, okay? We're performing austerity with our tongue, we're chanting Krishna's names, we're eating all the Krishna prasada, hopefully, because if we do eat bhoga, there are also some consequences to that. So, giving gifts, our devotional association is one of those highest gifts that we can give to people around us. And then sometimes the confusion is, like we find some of our children are in school, and then the question is, we say, well, don't associate with non-devotees. But then, we have to mix with people at work, we have to mix with other people, or other students in school. What to do? But association also implies that we should give association and not take. In that way, we can mingle with anybody and maintain a psychological space. Okay, any comments or questions? It is 1:15. We are following your time.
How do we give association, not take association?
How do we give association?
Not take association.
Not take association. By maintaining a psychological space. Psychological space means that, you know, for instance, if there is a festival and you have to go into the bush to cut some bamboo sticks or plantain leaves or whatever for decoration, and you know the place is infested with snakes, so you put on your boots and you go there, you cut whatever you want to cut. You don't dilly-dally there. You get what you want to get and then you get out. So yeah, you might, for instance, be in school or in the office and you are interacting with someone, you should be praying to the super soul in your heart to help to create positive spiritual change in their lives. You are conscious about your mission with those people, that you are there to help leverage their consciousness in Krishna consciousness. You're not there to just hang out with them and dilly-dally. That's how to give association. We take in association means you open your comfort zone, your spiritual conscious zone for them to download all of their nonsense on you. Because you know what? If one is not conscious, if one is not conscientiously conscious about these very factors, it's so easy to imbibe negative consciousness from people, because when we are within a close proximity, there is a lot that goes on subtly than the gross interactions. And that is why the acharyas, they even say, don't associate with mayavadis and all this stuff, because of the danger of this, the subtle nature of the interactions that goes on, subtle exchanges that goes on when people are within close proximity. Yes.
I have two questions and a comment, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
My first question is related to this. Even when we are associating with devotees, our peers, those of us who are younger devotees might experience this more than those who are more senior devotees, but we're still dirty. And so how do we go into those association with devotees and we protect them from our anartas and dirt, and protect ourselves from being contaminated with those things. You know, like not making offense, we're associating, but some sort of protection there. How do we do that?
Yeah, it's just a very practical. Now, we are associating with somebody, say the person is older than us, older than us in terms of service duration in the movement, their spiritual experiences. And when we get into those type of situations, our attention should be in the mode of subservience. We should be in the mode of, how can I serve this person in his mission to Srila Prabhupada? And if we are older, or we are seniors, we should think, how can I help this person? How can I protect this person from getting into trouble in their efforts to cultivate Krishna consciousness? Because sometimes we are not conscious about these things, and people come around us, new devotees come, and we don't care. We just want to engage them. Whether they chant their 16 rounds, we don't care. So I was in the Caribbean before I flew into Miami. So in the Caribbean, one of the countries I went, they sent one boy. His parents are devotees. He's 18 years old. He's studying in a university. He's studying mechanical engineering. So as he came, I never knew him before. I've been to that temple before. But then he came and was rendering some service. So I picked interest and started asking him what he's doing, how old is he, and all these things. Does he have a girlfriend? He said, yes, he has a girlfriend, but he doesn't chant. I said, but if the girl becomes pregnant, what are you going to do? So he said, he's being careful. So they like those type of concerning talks. Okay, younger people, if you don't ask them about how they are doing and what is their progress in school, or how many rounds you're chanting, it's like you don't care about them. So anybody can hang out with you, and then you just engage them, go and wash my clothes, go and do this, and go and do this, and that. But I've seen this, okay, there was one boy who approached me, he wanted to be my disciple. His mom and his dad, his parents are initiated. So I told him, why did you take initiation from your mom's guru? Because his father's guru is not on the planet. He said, yes, I could have. I'm close to him. But you know what? There are other swamis also that I'm close to. These are what he told me, a young man. He just graduated this year from the university. So he said, I meet these people, we talk, I serve them, but none of them ever asked me my state of affairs in school. This is what a young boy in our movement told me. He said, but you, right from when I was tender, each time we meet, you ask about basically two things. How is your Krishna consciousness? How is your school? So I was touched by that. It's just my nature, okay? Whether you're a devotee or not a devotee, these are things I ask people when we come together, especially young people. But he took it to another level. He thought that was caring. So when he told me this, I couldn't resist his plea to be a disciple. So young people, they value that you show some compassion to them, you show some love. It's not just about having to get them to do things for you. Yeah, so that is one of the ways that we can interact with younger people, or the older folks, or the senior people who are in the service. And it is their responsibility. See, when you're in the service and someone accepts your service, You are creating a bond. And that is why those who are more service-oriented in Krishna consciousness, their bonding with Krishna is more solid, more stronger than those who don't render service. If someone is coming for years and they don't have any service in the temple, how can they say that they are devotees? Because the chanting means we are begging for service. And that brings to mind, I remember one temple that I was staying when I was younger, when I was brahmachari, there was one guru who came to that temple, and then he had a disciple there, a female disciple there, and the disciple asked a question during the class. She said, Guru Maharaj, I want to serve you, but you don't stay here. He said, you don't stay here. What to do? So the guru said, do you have a temple president here? She said, yes. And he said, go and meet the temple president or the temple management. Ask for some engagement. If they're happy with you, you should know you are serving me and I'm happy with you. Yeah. Yes.
We know that association is so important. But there's many cases where because you have to support your family and, you know, live in the material side of things, there's many professions where you find yourself kind of thrown into the fire of material existence because your association and the hours that you have to work becomes more than the time that you can spend with the devotees. And then you're constantly surrounded by their method of living, which is non-devotional. So I guess just maybe some advice or suggestions like on how to keep yourself fixed so you don't get dragged away, because like it becomes, after a while you get increasingly dragged away because of your association with the non-devotees and, you know, so much nonsense you're hearing all the time.
Yeah.
And so your mind eventually becomes filled with all that and you get dragged away.
Yep. Thank you. It's a very practical question. Thank you very much. Now, I have met a number of people who fit into this situation, that they're working and they don't have the time to be able to have proper devotional association. Or they're working, they don't have the time to chant. And when I examine their situations, I found two things. I found that in most cases, these devotees do not maintain high self-regulation. Second, they don't effectively manage their 24 hours of the day. I'll give you an example. So I like giving this example because this is my friend. He's a medical doctor. He serves in Pennsylvania now. So when he's an Indian boy. He finished his MBBS in India, so he got a scholarship, and he came to the U.S. to do his MD. So we met in Michigan, Detroit precisely, some years ago. And he got attracted to me, so he was going around with me to different programs. So one day we are in a car, someone was driving, and he turned to me and said, Maharaj, can I ask a question? I said, of course, you are my friend. Feel free to ask any questions. He said, we medical doctors, we're very busy. We don't have the time to chant 16 rounds. I said, good for you. You think you're the only medical doctor in this movie? Or you're the first medical doctor? And so I asked him, how do you use your 24 hours of the day? Let's break down how you use your 24 hours. Let's analyze how you use your 24 hours of the day. And so I asked, How many hours you use walking in the hospital? He told. So we wrote it down. I said, how many hours for sleeping? How many hours for your private readings? Because medical school, you read a lot. So by the time we analyze this, not even up to half of the process of the analysis, he broke off, almost like crying. He said, Maharaj, I'm sorry. I didn't use my time properly. Now, he lives in Harrisburg. And I remember last year when I went to Harrisburg, he said, Maharaj, whenever you are in America, my home should be your base. I said, I don't have any problem with that. The problem is, who is going to cook for me? Because your wife is not chanting. It's my friend, so I could just openly, you know, challenge him and, you know, talk to him in any way. But the point is that there are two things you can do, anyone can do, self-regulation. Lord Krishna mentions about self-regulation also in the Bhagavad Gita. Self-regulation. Sometimes you say some things and they look like, what is this guy talking about? they are there in your Bhagavad Gita, okay? Now, Lord Krishna mentions about everything that we do, we need to offer it. We should be regulated in terms of our eating. In fact, even Prabhupada mentions in one of the purports how we should eat. Have the stomach with food, one quarter, with H2O, water, and then the remaining one quarter, air. Now, why do we have to do that? Why don't we eat until we get here? Because we cannot function. It will just knock us off. We will go to sleep. And we'll be deprived of utilizing our time effectively. So, even what we eat in the night, how many hours you should wait before going to sleep? You need about 2 hours. And if you eat too late in the night, you're just looking for problem. If you eat late in the night with heavy protein foods, the probability of your waking up early is 1 in infinity. Most unlikely. Most unlikely. So, we have to see how we regulate ourselves in terms of when we go to bed. If we go to bed, and for me, I didn't find any problem with going to bed early, because when I was a teenager in high school, we were living in boarding house, a missionary school. So we live in a boarding house. 13 years old, you're away from home. You're living in a boarding house. And you have to go to bed at 9:30 and wake up at 4 o'clock, 13 years old. And so when I came to ISKCON and I saw all this going to bed and waking up at this time, I thought, come on, I did this when I was a kid. So self-regulation means we have to use our energies, our eating, our sleeping, our interactions wisely. Bearing in mind, we need to go to bed at a particular time. Even self-regulation also implies what type of foods we eat. If we are eating too much of fried foods, we can be guaranteed for bypass surgery. We can be guaranteed for bypass surgery in due course of time. So, there are some things that are not healthy, but we do it because of the tongue. Sarira avidya jodundriya. Most of the diseases that people have is because of the uncontrolled tongue, specifically about eating. So we can regulate ourselves and we'll be able to cope with the integration of our spiritual practice and our professional development. These are things I have taught, I mean, practically everywhere I go. Integration of our spiritual practice, and it's called life-work balance. And so, I know some of the people that I have met in the past, and then I ask them, how many rounds are you able to chant? 5 rounds. And then we come into the temple like 5 years. I ask why? Oh, work, this and this. But then I remember in one case that I became very confrontational with this lady. In one case, you know, I asked, so when you're on the train going to work, what happens to your telephone? So the telephone is buzzing. And she'll be checking her messages. I said, come on, we don't do like that. You have to be self-regulated. You have to have a time. You check your phone. You can't keep your phone open 24 hours. That is not how the telephone is designed to be used. There are some people that when they wake up from bed, the first thing is to check their telephone. We are very much in the mood of joking if we are doing that. Because the purpose of the telephone is defeated. So, effective time management is also another important factor. If we manage our time effectively, utilizing all of the 24 hours in very useful ways, we will not have any complaints. See, I have one of my aspiring disciples, so he's a German boy. So when I was in Germany, he traveled with me to Hungary. And then one day he came to me and said, Maharaj, you publish so much. You go to conferences here and there. But since I came here, I never seen you. I'm not seeing you doing any research. I said, I did. I made a presentation one day in Oxford at a management conference. I made 5 research papers presentation one day. So I'm on break till the end of the year. He busted out laughing. Now I use the whole rest of the year for my devotional culture. Yeah, I overworked myself for one conference, and that's it. So you have to be able to see how you're doing your work and you're not carrying your work home. Finish your work in the office. When you come home, you should give quality time to your spouse and to your children. This is called effective management of your time and regulating yourself properly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a good example for us. He had a family of more than 10. He was an acharya. He was a judge. How did he make it? 2 principles, self-regulation, effective time management. Our time is far beyond now. We have to stop here. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.